Okay. Let's. Want it here? Yeah. It's fine over here. We can end a shiur in mid-sentence, but we can't start a shiur in mid-sentence. So let's back up a little bit. Gimel Amud Beis, six lines before the bottom. Okay? Kivan. First word on the line is Kivan. This also is in mid-sentence, but it's a little less in mid-sentence. Kivan Sha'ala Amud HaShachar, we're in the middle of discussing David HaMelech's schedule. And actually, we're really in the middle of a question that the Gemara asks. The Gemara had asked, said that David HaMelech gets up at midnight. Did David HaMelech know when midnight was? We showed psukim that indicate that even Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know when midnight was. So how did David HaMelech know when midnight was? So at this point, the Gemara is agreeing with that premise. David HaMelech did not know when midnight was. How did he get up at midnight? He had an alarm clock. He had a harp that was positioned such that at midnight, when the northern wind would blow, it would hit his harp, play music, and that's how he would get up. That's where we stand now. While we're at it, so we say he would get up, he would learn until morning. Then what happened at morning? So the Gemara says, we're continuing on David's schedule. Kivan she'ola amud ha'shachar. Once Amud HaShachar hit, if anybody doesn't hear, please tell me so I could. Right, everybody, all the way in the back? Okay. Good? Okay. Kivan Shaul Amud HaShachar. Once Amud HaShachar hit, Nichnisu Chachme Yisrael Etzloy. The Chachamim would come into him. Amuloy. And they told him, Adeneinu HaMelech. Our master, the king. Amcha Yisrael tzrichim parnasa. There's an economic crisis. The Jewish people need parnasa. Omar Elohim. So he answered, Lechuvis parnasu zemize. Okay. Get business going. Let's take initiatives. Omar Elohim. And they answered him, no. To just make different business initiatives among ourselves is not going to do now. Why? A handful is not going to satisfy the lion. The need is great. The resources within ourselves are not going to suffice. It's simply not going to be enough. We have to create new resources. You have a pit and you want to fill it up. You can't dig soil out of the pit in order to fill the pit. It's obvious. So therefore, this is not going to do. Omar lohem. So therefore, he told them, okay, Lechu opishtu yedeichem bigdud. Go and form bands. Go marauding. Go and seize things from other from the neighboring nations. I'll just note it right. In general, we have to elaborate a little bit on this whole exchange. First of all, kind of implies that this was David's daily schedule. Every day, the Chacham would come in and have the same discussion with him. We need panasa. That's kind of the implication of the Gemara. Okay, we'll get to that. But just here, I want to note already. Doesn't sound very nice, does it? We're missing parnasa. So, all right, go marod. Is that a proper verb? Go marod. We have to understand something. This is not a politically correct point that I'm going to say right now. But David HaMelech really implemented Malchus Shomayim. The way Malchus Shomayim is really supposed to run in this world. Really, the way this world works is that the nations of the world are here to accommodate us. Not a nice thing to say, and I hope that this recording stays among our people. But that's the way. That's really the way it is. In the ideal world, that's what will be. And David was implementing that already then. So, the truth is, it can manifest in many ways. Sometimes the nations of the world accommodate us by persecuting us to a healthy degree. Sometimes that's necessary too. Keep us in check. But David HaMelech was implementing it in the ideal way, which is really representative of what will be later. But yes, the nations of the world are here for us. Okay. You need a Gemara? Somewhere right here. What's that? They all gone? Oh, it's the wrong one. Okay, so this can be the other one. And it's the second one. Oh, go ahead. No art scrolls left. Well, if you listen, you'll understand without. You'll be okay without. Okay. Shkoyach. Okay, so now that's it. They have their order from the king to go and wage, well, battles. So what's the procedure now? There's a very clear bureaucracy now. Miyad yoyetzim b'achitoyfel. They would go consult with Achitoyfel. He would plan the strategy. V'nimlochim b'sanhedrin. Then they would consult with the Sanhedrin to get their approval. V'sha'alim b'orim v'tumim. Then they would go ask the Urim v'tumim to see if they're going to get the okay. Meaning the Urim v'tumim would say, this was an initial permission. Urim v'tumim would tell them if they'll win or not. It's certainly convenient to be able to do that. Okay. Now, before we go on, the Gemara is going to base this on Pesukim, but there's a very, very important procedure that's being outlined here. It's very important to understand. The Mefarshim make a big deal about this. When you're planning, certainly when you're talking about a military campaign, but the truth is, any sort of plan in life, there are a few steps that are necessary to take. First of all, Seichel. You have to plan it with Seichel. That's what Achitofel was doing. We'll see soon. He was a very, very great authority when it came to Seichel. And then the next thing to do is see how does it work lahalacha. Does it check out? Does the Torah approve? After that, if you have the means, you can go ask Ruach HaKodesh what's going to happen. But I want to spend a little time just bringing this point home, because people often wonder, where is there room for Rabbanim to answer questions about politics or military policy or things like that? Isn't it just something for the experts? And here in the Gemara we're saying that yes. Well, yes and no. It starts with the experts, but then you do have to bring it to the Sanhedrin. Why? I'll just give an example. We were in the States when the Intifada in 2000 broke out. And we weren't sure if we should come back or not at the time. So we wanted to ask Rav Yoshev. We asked Rav Yoshev. I'm going to get back to the details. The reason I'm skipping the details right now. Well, we got the question through to Rav Yoshev. He said, yes, you can come back. We came back. Before we came back, I was telling somebody that we weren't sure if we should go back or not, and we conveyed the question to Rav Yoshev. And he said, where does Rav Yoshev come into this? What is he, a general? Why is he the one to make the decision? Okay. It's a semi-legitimate question, maybe. But now I want to back up to the details. Actually, when I was trying to get the question in, I spoke to one of the people there in the house, asked him if he would convey the question. He said, 1 minute, what is it you're asking him? Are you approaching him as a drawing on his Ruach HaKodesh? You want him to tell you whether you'll be okay or not? He's not going to answer the question. So I said, no, that's not what I'm asking. I'm asking a halachic question. According to halacha, should I be coming back to Eretz Yisrael now or not? Okay, if that's clearly your question, I'll answer. And his answer was yes. Where is there a question of halacha here? And the answer is, according to halacha, you're supposed to be safe. You're supposed to keep yourself safe. The question is, was the situation such that al pi halacha, it's too dangerous to come back? Or, al pi halacha, are you allowed to come back? Is it not dangerous enough to have to hold you back? Obviously, in order to answer such a question, you have to have a combination of two pieces of information. You have to know, what are the facts? That you have to ask a military expert. But after you have the facts, the question is, so there's, let's say, 45 degrees of danger. And the question is, I have a life running in Eretz Yisrael, and I'm learning in Eretz Yisrael. How does one weigh against the other? If it would be 90 degrees danger, the answer is no. If it would be 5 degrees danger, maybe the answer is clearly yes. But once it's already somewhere in the middle, how do you weigh that? That a military expert can't answer you. He knows what the facts are. He knows how dangerous it is. But does that justify coming back? Am I allowed to come back when it's 45 degrees danger? That's a question of halacha. A military expert can't answer that. Now, people don't think of it that way because there's no siman in Shulchan Aruch that answers that question. And the truth is that's also why you have to ask a very great authority. Who knows the answer to that question? You can't show it in Shulchan Aruch. Answer is, when a person is a very, very great authority, we're not drawing on knowledge of straight Shulchan Aruch. We're drawing on a person who has learned the full breadth of Torah. Very, very deep. And he's seen countless cases of halacha's discretion, of halacha's judgment, until he starts gaining a sense of how halacha weighs one factor against the other. That's why you have the top rabbanim of the generation who are able to answer these types of questions, even though they're not clearly articulated anywhere. Why? Because they've come across enough questions in their tour through the full breadth of Shas that they start gaining a sense not just of cases, what the answer is here, what the answer is there, but a sense of the Torah's discretion, how the Torah weighs factors against each other. And therefore, he's able to come and say, yes, according to halacha's discretion, for weighing the fact that you have a life set up here, you're learning here, but the danger involved, you can come back, or you cannot come back. That's really the answer. And that's why. Oh. So the truth is you need a combination, like, oh, I'm not asking a good question. I forgot I wanted to address that. We say that you need a combination of the reality together with halachic discretion. So the truth is that sometimes there are situations, I'll give you another case, but there are situations where you mamish have to have the exact details. There are other situations where it's enough to have a vague picture of the facts to know, alright, in halacha this is already a no-brainer. Sometimes you'll see that also in these types of situations, they'll call in the experts. Ask what do they have to say. I've seen that happen too. Rabbanim will call in the experts and discuss it with them. After they have all the factors, they'll give an answer. Sometimes, even with just the vague, without knowing the intricacies of the ins and outs, it's already enough. You have enough of a picture to be able to answer the question.
David HaMelech himself said to do it. Why do they have to go past that?
Why do they have to go past David HaMelech? The truth is, we're seeing here that when it came to a question of taking Klal Yisrael out to battle, the ruling of one particular authority would not do. We needed the full Sanhedrin. This had to be, since after all, Sanhedrin was the final word in halacha in those days. You had a means of reaching an absolute final answer. You had to go to the Sanhedrin. They had to be the ones to answer.
What was the point of doing between? Was it just curiosity or anything more than that?
Well, it's an important aspect of curiosity, because if they know that they're going to lose, again, halacha is not guaranteeing that they'll be okay. Halacha is saying, according to the halachic discretion, it's justified to go out to battle. Where in Betumim, it's the difference between the Pesach and the Rebbe. You go to the Pesach to get the halachic okay. You go to the Rebbe for the Ruach HaKodesh, whoever your Rebbe is. But that's really what the Urim and Thummim was doing. The Urim and Thummim was giving you the absolute, yes, it'll be okay. You might ask, Tshuvas HaRashba is. Go straight there. Tshuvas HaRashba, the Rashba basically asks this. What? Oh, kind of. The Urim and Thummim is going to answer whether in Shamayim you have enough merit to win this battle. What's that going to depend on? That's going to depend on whether you took the precautionary steps. If you go straight to the Urim and Thummim before you did everything in your power to reach the right decision, the Urim and Thummim will tell you, you're going to lose. After you took all the responsible steps, right? You went to Achitav, you got a responsible battle plan. Then you checked from the perspective of Halacha, is this okay or not? Now you can come to the Urim and Thummim with a justifiable question. Now the Urim and Thummim might give you the okay. Yeah, he carried the responsibility for coming up with Klal Yisrael solutions. But at the end of the day, Achitofel will see a very strong pasuk soon, that when it came to this sort of council, he was taps. Oh, very good. So that was the Sanhedrin's job. That's number one. That was part of the purpose of asking. He's asking, okay, Doran the Tumim says they're going to win. This is also an answer to the question that was posed before. Your question answers that question. The Doran the Tumim says they're going to win, but even in a victory, there are casualties. Who's gonna cover that? That's what we still needed the Sanhedrin for. The Sanhedrin needed to daven for them. To daven that there would not be casualties. And Rashi emphasizes that part of it. Rashi says that the reason they went to the Sanhedrin was so that the Sanhedrin should daven for them. But the Mefarshim add something else. This is very interesting. You know why we say Lam Natzeach every day in our tefillah? We say Lam Natzeach every day. It's based on this Gemara. This is what David would say after he sent them off. It says that Yoav ben Tzruya, he was the leader of the battle, right? He was the general. He was only willing to go out if he knew that David back in Yerushalayim was davening and learning for their merit. So after sending them off, David HaMelech would say, Lam Natzeach Mizmor LeDavid, which is very relevant if you analyze the words. And that's why we say it every day. We're entering a battlefield every day of our lives. Okay, you see, another experience with I have a brother who had twins, preemies. They were born very early and their lives were in big danger. They were born on the beginning of the sixth month. At one point it was very touch and go with one of them. Mamish looked like he was going to go. In the hospital they basically gave up hope. They even offered my sister-in-law to take him out of the incubator and hold him because they didn't think he was going to make it through the night. And then somebody came, some doctor from a different hospital came with some sort of treatment that would up the chances of survival, but there would be a big risk of side effects that would leave permanent damage. And the doctors told my brother and sister-in-law, these are the facts, you have to decide if you want to go ahead with the treatment or not. Young parents, right, their first kids, 22 years old, have to make such a decision. Do we want to better the kid's life by a kid's chance for survival by a couple of percent with a big chance of side effects that are permanent damage? How are they going to answer that question? So here also, they went, they asked Reb Chaim Kanievsky. Reb Chaim Kanievsky said, I don't know. They gave him the exact details. He said, I don't know. The only person who can answer this question is Rav Eliyashiv. They came to Rav Eliyashiv. When they brought the question in, the people they said, get all the details exactly down. He's going to have it very clear on a piece of paper. Exactly what the doctors say. They brought it into him within seconds. He said to do the treatment. That was the way he operated. They ruled on questions of life and death off the cuff. Where did that come from? There's no seif in Shulchan Aruch that says that. It comes to being exposed to thousands of halachic questions and seeing how halacha deals with it. You gain a sense of halacha's discretion. That's a very important point. Reb Tzadik of Lublin and other Mefarshim, Reb Dessler, bring out that's really what this Gemara is conveying. The procedure of going about making these sorts of decisions. You want to say something? What? Baruch Hashem, they are both healthy 10-year-olds today. Neither of them have ill effects from that treatment. Baruch Hashem. Okay. What's that?
You're going to leave us hanging?
You're right. I forgot. I apologize. Oh, but that reminds me that in general, sometimes people ask questions and I think it'll be better to answer later on and then I forget. Remind me. If I leave you hanging and then I forget to get back to it, please remind me. I'm not trying to get out of the question. I'll say I don't know the answer. It's coming up. Let's see. Okay. Let's move on. Omar Rabbi Yosef. Rabbi Yosef said, Maikra, what's the pasuk that indicates this procedure? Iksiv. It says in the pasuk, V'acharei Achitofel, after Achitofel was, Ben Ayahu Ben Yoyada. Those were the addresses they had to go to. First Achitofel, we said he planned the battle strategy. Then they went to Benayahu ben Yoyada, we'll see soon. He was the leader of the Sanhedrin. The Eviasar, then they went to Eviasar. He was the Kohen Gadol. He wore the Urim and Thummim. V'sar Tzavo LaMelech Yoyel. Then they went to the general, Yoyel. After everything was in place, he led the campaign. Now the Gemara elaborates. Achitofel Zeyoyetz. Achitofel was the counselor. V'chein Oymer. And the pasuk says, it was a strong pasuk. V'atzas Achitofel Asher Yo'atz Bayomim Oyim. The counsel of Achitofel that he would give in those days, Kasher Yishal Ish V'dvaro Elokim. It was of the caliber of if a person asked for the word of Hashem. See quite what sort of caliber that was. Benayahu ben Yoyada, he's the next address, the Sanhedrin. That refers to the Sanhedrin. He was the head of the Sanhedrin. The Eviasar, who's that? Elor and Vitumim. That represents Elor and Vitumim. He was the Kohen Gadol. The Cheinu Oimer, as the Pasuk says, Ubenayahu ben Yoyada ala Kresi v'ala Plesi. Benayahu ben Yoyada was in charge of the Kresi and the Plesi. That refers to the Sanhedrin. How'd they get that nickname? V'lama nikra shmam Kresi uPlesi. Why was the Sanhedrin referred to as Kresi uPlesi? Kresi means lichrois, to cut. Cut and dry. Shekosim divrayim. After they gave a ruling, it was cut and dry. Things were clear cut, as clear as it can be. Plesi. Why were they called Plesi? So that's from the word Pele. Shemuflaim bidivrayim. What they said was wondrous. They covered every possible angle of the question. Na'achakach, after you got the Sanhedrin's okay, and the Urim and the Tumim's okay, Sar Tzavo LaMelech Yoyel. Then they went on to the general Yoyov to actually lead the campaign. Okay. Again, as we noted, this obviously couldn't be Devar HaMelech's everyday schedule. You're not going to have the same exact exchange every day. Besides, after the first 2 days, he'd already known not to suggest that they first try Parnosim from within themselves. Not going to go through the same thing every day. The Mepharshim say that the point here really is, this is giving one example of the way it worked. The point here is, as soon as dawn broke, he was already thrown right into all of the communal affairs and concerns. We'll see soon. This is also an element of his greatness. By most kings, the day began 3 hours into the day. Before 10, there wasn't anybody to speak to. He was already available as soon as dawn broke. And basically, all day, he was busy with Klal Yisrael's concerns. He wanted some time for his own spirituality. It was only instead of sleeping, as we saw earlier. Okay. Now, Omer Rav Yitzchak Brei Rav Idi, Nikra. What's the pasuk that shows us the idea that we said before, that David HaMelech used to use a harp as an alarm clock? Ura kivoidi, awake my glory. Ura hanevel v'kinor or ira shochav. Wake me up by means of the lyre, by means of the harp, and I will awaken the dawn. What does this mean? Okay, whatever it is, we do get a picture of, after all the awakenings and the harp and stuff, the harp was busy with awakening. Okay, but what exactly is the pasuk saying? Awake my glory, that's number one. David HaMelech, as we'll see soon, he had a very unique style of royalty. Most kings were very regal in the sense that they did things at their own pace, nobody rushed them. Part of their honor was in the fact that before 10 you couldn't get into them. So David HaMelech would say, my glory is not going to make me sleep. I'm going to get my glory off its feet. Don't worry about the glory too much. Wake up. And then he has the harp awakening him. That's really supporting the point that we made before, that the harp would wake him up. And he uses the term, I will awaken the dawn. Meaning, most people are awakened by dawn. It becomes light, you wake up. David HaMelech woke dawn up. He was up already from beforehand. He was the one waking up the dawn. Okay, here also is just a comment that's worth making, because this also, you never know where halachas are going to pop up. This represents one of the first halachas in Shulchan Aruch. Halacha in Shulchan Aruch, this is a very unique halacha that very few people keep. I know there's at least one person here who keeps this halacha, but I'm afraid to say I'm not that person. There's a halacha in Shulchan Aruch to awaken the dawn. It's good for a person to be up before dawn. And you should be the one awakening the dawn. Why? You see that was David HaMelech's practice. He would be up awakening the dawn. A very interesting halacha. Obviously, it's one of those halachas that it's not what we call an absolute chiyuv. You factor it in with the rest of your schedule. But what's the idea behind it? The idea behind it is there's some very profound points in this. Well, I'll give just two understandings. First of all, once dawn hits, it's already the zman for davening. Hashem is already waiting for Klal Yisrael to come daven. So, Hashem's already there waiting and we're still in bed? Therefore, it's appropriate to be up before Hashem gets there. Okay, I feel uncomfortable saying this. I'm conveying it. But the next point is, and this is really the point that we're bringing across here with David HaMelech. David HaMelech was expressing by saying, I awaken the dawn, is that I lead my life according to, I lead my life. My life doesn't lead me. Meaning, I don't wake up because dawn woke me up. By me, waking up is an initiative of my own. I get up of my own accord. I get up of my own initiative. I lead my life. I'm not led through life in any way. I'm not a reactor. Everything by me is planned. Every day, every moment of the day was planned. David HaMelech initiated the morning. The morning didn't initiate David HaMelech. And that's also expressed in the harp. If you want to play and you want it to sound good, you can't take breaks. Right? Part of playing a musical instrument is not missing a beat. Right? What if you're playing and you say, I can play it perfectly, but I have to take four breaks in the middle. Try to remember where it was holding, the tune. All right, and we'll pick it up in another minute. It's not going to sound good. A harp, any musical arrangement, its beauty is contingent on continuity. It's got to continue straight. And therefore, by David HaMelech, even sleeping was all an exact part of the plan. He didn't sleep till morning. He didn't let go when he went to sleep. And now when I wake up, when I'm woken up, we'll continue. No, he didn't miss a beat. Sleeping was planned. It was all part of the schedule. Morning didn't wake him up. He was up awakening the morning. Okay, we'll move on. Now, all this, let's remember that all this was a tangent. Now let's get back to our discussion. This was all brought in to answer, how could David HaMelech say, I got up at midnight? Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't pinpoint midnight. How did David HaMelech? And the answer we gave was, his harp did the job. Now we'll see another answer. Rabbi Zeira Amar. Rabbi Zeira says, Moshe le'olam havayoda. No, Moshe did know when Chatzos was. We showed a pasuk earlier indicating that Moshe didn't know. Pasuk said that Moshe told the Jews in Mitzrayim, Kach Chatzos halayla niyotze mitzoich Mitzrayim. When he was predicting Makas Bechayrus, he said, Kachatzois, at around Chatzos, Hashem will be going out of Mitzrayim. Which implied that he couldn't pinpoint exactly when Chatzos was. He said approximately. What's that? It was when he announced it. It was actually, the Gemara says he was telling it to the Jewish people. That was when he was making his announcement. And therefore we said, so if Moshe didn't know, David certainly didn't know. The Gemara says, no, Moshe did know. V'David nami aviyoda. And Moshe, David also knew. V'kivan de David aviyoda. And if David indeed knew, kino lamali. So why did he need that harp? We do see him saying that the harp woke him up. And the Gemara answers, Lis'ure mishnase. He was able to pinpoint midnight. He needed the harp only to wake him up. Okay. Now v'kivan de Moshe aviyoda. Now, if Moshe knew exactly when Chatzos was, Lamale lemeimar kachatzos, then why did he say kachatzos, like at Chatzos? That's what kachatzos literally means. Like at Chatzos, which we're understanding to mean approximately Chatzos. The Gemara answers, and this is a lesson for all of us. The Gemara answers, he knew exactly when Chatzos was. Yet, he said, around Chatzos. Kosova, he suspected, Shema Yit Uit Stagnine Paroi. I know exactly when Chatzos is. But Paroi's people might not calculate it exactly. They might be off by a couple of seconds or minutes. V'yoymru Moshe Badayhu. And then, they'll say, oh, Moshe was wrong, it did not happen at Chatzos. And therefore, since they might make a mistake, he said, around Chatzos. Now, Do'omar Mar, now this is a very profound point for all of us. Why? Do'omar Mar, the famous statement's been made, Lemad l'shoin chaloy mar einu yedea. It's always a good idea to express things in an uncertain way. Always say, I think, I'm not sure. Almost always good. Right. Good. Shema tisbad, are you sure? Shema tisbade v'teyoches. Because you might be shown up and you might be made a fool of. So it's an issue of humility. You're not impressing anybody if you come and say things, oh, I know for sure. So it's always a good idea. Say, I believe, I think. Don't set yourself up for being shown up. Oh. Oh. You're asking a very good question. You're asking, 1 minute, what did Hashem say? Hashem said at midnight. Moshe can just convey what Hashem said. Even if Moshe didn't know when midnight was, Hashem knows when midnight is, right? If Hashem said at midnight, Moshe can say at midnight. But the answer is, and here we're taking this lesson that we just learned a step further. Rashi and Tosis both answer this question. And they say that Moshe Rabbeinu, if he was conveying the information, it was his responsibility, he understood, if I'm giving a message, it's my responsibility to be able to show its accuracy. To show its accuracy. Meaning, for myself, I'm the one conveying it, I can't be in a situation that then I'll say, I don't know, but that's what Hashem said. Ask him. No. If Hashem appointed Moshe to represent him and give the message, Moshe has to be able to demonstrate, to show that everything happened as predicted. And therefore, something that Moshe would not be able to show, he came up front and said, this I'm telling you approximately, I might not be able to demonstrate this. What's that?
Hashem tells him something.
No, Hashem, when Hashem gives a prophet a message, the prophet has to understand that his responsibility is to convey it in the most believable, acceptable way. It's part of his job to make sure it's properly given over. And that's why also, a lot of times in Nevi'im, we get prophecies, we get these vague images. It wasn't an easy job. They had to figure out how to put it into words, and part of their challenge was to convey it in the best way possible. Moshe Rabbeinu got clearer images, but many of the Nevi'im, many of the Nevu'os that we have, actually represented these kind of hazy pictures that they got, then they had to work to interpret it. And then they had to work to convey it right.
Crazy thing is, all the firstborns are dying, and everybody say, yeah, see, he was doing it all.
Oh, now you're asking another good question. That's what Pari's people are going to have on their mind. Half of Mitzrayim is dropping dead. They're wondering when it's going to be their turn. But they're saying, yeah, but he was 5 seconds off. Ha, we won. So here I'll give two answers that the Mepharshim give. Rashi implies the first. And this is also a bit mind-boggling. Rashi says no. They might think that Chatzos is actually 3 minutes earlier, or 2 minutes earlier. So therefore, no, nobody's dying yet. They're going to say, hey, it's midnight, nothing happened. And for 2 minutes, or for 1 minute, there will be a Chilul Hashem. They'll say, you see, it didn't happen. After a minute, boom, it would hit. And then they'd shut their mouths. But for that 1 minute, there would be a Chilul Hashem. That's what Moshe was trying to avoid. That's point number one. The other point that the Mepharshim say, the Pnei Yeshua and others say this, is that Moshe, part of what Moshe was trying to do was show how it's without any cracks. To show how it's without any cracks, because they would ride on anything. Yes, even in a suicidal way, or being killed, but wasn't Moshe. You know what Columbus did? When Columbus was being threatened by the natives, he knew that there was about to be an eclipse. So he said, that if you're going to threaten me, then tonight I'm going to tomorrow morning I'm going to turn off the sun. And then the next morning the sun turned off. And the natives backed off. Okay. The Paris people were trying to get Moshe on this any way they could. They were trying to accuse him of sorcery and this and that. Moshe had to show a seamless show in order for it to work, because they would ride on anything to say, yeah, okay, we went through a rough year, but it was really... And we see, if this sounds far-fetched, this actually did happen. This actually did happen. What happened? After Makas Bechoris, the Jews are leaving. What happened? Pari sat down with his people and he said, hey, we were tricked. Wasn't Hashem, wasn't anything. Why? Because Hashem said, I'm going to smite all the gods of the land. And hey, look, right outside the border, Balpar is still standing. It was all a farce. Let's go get them. Right? They found some scene. All the ten Makis didn't help. Hashem set it up that way. It was outside the borders. It wasn't supposed to be smitten. And Hashem wanted them to take the bait. But you see that really was what Moshe was dealing with. They were going to ride on anything to say, hey, there's a crack. It's all baloney. Okay. So that's answer number two to the question. If Moshe didn't know midnight, how did David know midnight? The answer was everybody did know midnight. And when Moshe said approximately, it was just in order to avoid these PR issues. We have another answer. Rav Ashi says, you know what? You completely misunderstood the pasuk. When Moshe said, like at midnight, Hashem will emerge, he was not expressing uncertainty. He was saying something else. Moshe made his announcement at midnight of the 13th. When did it happen? It happened at midnight of the 14th, right? Moshe made his announcement at midnight of the 13th. And what Moshe meant to say was, Hashem said, like it's chatzos now, just like the current time, ani yotze b'soich Mitzrayim. I'm going to go out of Mitzrayim. Like wasn't approximate. He was saying, like it is now, it's going to be tomorrow. Just as now it's chatzos, it's going to be tomorrow. He was actually expressing chatzos in a clear-cut way. So yes, Moshe knew and David knew. Okay.
Achitofel.
This was not just a question of halach, meaning if it was just a pure question of no, if you have the means of clarifying it through Ruach HaKodesh, you do so. They had Nevi'im then, they took advantage. They were able to. That was part of the Hashkach of those days. You were able to get the direct word of Hashem as to what was going to be. Nowadays, you're right. Yeah. I'll put it this way. Nowadays, for us, Halacha's decision is the word of Hashem. But we just have to stress an important point. Halacha is not going to guarantee that that's how it'll turn out. Halacha is saying, this is what's the right thing for you to do. But it doesn't mean you'll make it. It means that if Chas V'Shalom, a person doesn't make it, he was not lax in his obligation. He wasn't irresponsible. You can take it as a gzeirah min hashamayim. That's what the halachic ruling is. You can go ahead and rely on Hashem. It's not irresponsible. But if you actually have the means of knowing in an absolute way what's going to happen through Ruach HaKodesh, not through other means, but through Ruach HaKodesh, yes.
But if you have the halachic is telling you, was the halachic decision that you may do it or you shouldn't?
Well, you have to remember also, using the Urim V'Tumim was a part of the Ishtadlus. Using the Urim V'Tumim was a part of the Ishtadlus. It's actually stated already in the Torah, the Shoah Aloy, that the king will, the leader, Yeshua, will ask Elazar HaKohen That is a part of the Ishtadlus. Meaning, in those days, if you had the Urim Bitumim available and you said, well, Halacha says it's okay, so we're going to go ahead, you have not yet maximized your Ishtadlus. Part of the Ishtadlus was, you have an Urim Bitumim, it's the Urim Bitumim. But the Urim Bitumim could only be utilized once you did all your other steps. Okay. Next Gemara. We're continuing on the subject of David. Now we've already started seeing that David HaMelech was a unique king. And now we're going to see that in a much greater extent. Le David. The Pasuk says, Le David, Shamra Nafshi Ki Chasidan. Listen to this. David says, Hashem, Hashem, preserve me because I'm pious. That's an interesting thing for a person to be declaring to Hashem. What? I don't think so. Maybe I didn't read out the list. A couple of words. Yeah, what? Right? Yeah, okay. The David, Shamra Nafshi Ki Chasidon. David says, Hashem, preserve me because I'm pious. Now, what did he mean, I'm pious? So Levi and Rabbi Yitzchak. Levi and Rabbi Yitzchak differed in what he meant, what piety he was referring to. Chadoma, one said, Kachoma David lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is what David was telling Hashem. Rebbeinu Shel Olam, Loi Chosid Ani? Am I not pious? Look how pious I am. Shekol Malchei Mizrach U'Ma'arav, all the kings of the east and the west, Yeshenim Ad Shalosh Shoyes, they sleep until 3 hours into the day. V'ani, but look at me. Chatzos Laila Akum Lohoydes Lach, I'm already up at midnight to praise you. That was David's piety that he was expressing to Hashem. Oh, we'll see. We'll see. Yes, it's sounds strange. Let's see. Veidach. The other opinion said, no, that's not the piety he was referring to. Kachom David lifnei HaKadosh Baruch. This is what David was telling Hashem. Ribbono Shel Olam, Loi Chosid Ani? Am I not pious? Shekol Malchei Mizrach U'Ma'arav, all the kings of the east and the west, Yoshvim Agudos V'Agudos B'Chvoidom. They sit together in groups, all showing their glory, busy showing how important and great they are. Vani, you know what David doubled as? I don't know if the salary of the king wasn't enough, but in addition, he was the local rabbi. Women had a shaila, they came to David. Yodai meluchlocha is bedam ubashfir. David is sitting with his royal garment on his throne, and his hands are bloody and messy with the blood ubashfir and with embryos when women would miscarry. Well, blood is obvious shayla of nida. When we have shayla of nida, would have blood to come show him, he would look, see the blood. Bishfir, if a woman would miscarry, there are some forms, sometimes if a woman miscarries early, a form comes out. And we're not sure, is this considered a human form that requires her, that renders her tame, or is it not? So there are different, depending on the state of the body, etc., you have to take it to a local rav. He would take it to David, hand him these dead masses of mush. Ubeshilya, and with embryonic sacs also. Embryonic sac comes out. Question is, does it indicate that there was a fetus? Does it not? Is she tame? Is she not tame? David would take it and analyze it and probe it and give the answer. Kedei letari shalabala. I do that in order to enable women to go be with their husbands. So that's my piety. V'loy oyv. And not only that, elo kol ma she'ani oseh. Anything I do, any ruling I give, ani nimlach b'mfivoshes rabbi. I consult with my Rebbe mfivoshes. V'oyv elo, we'll see soon. Mfivoshes was actually one of Shaul's children who served as David's Rebbe. We'll see soon. Hey, what's that? Of? No, he was a grandchild of Shaul HaMelech. Of Shaul HaMelech, yeah. I said son, I'm sorry, grandson. Mephibosheth Rabbi, Yofe Danti? Yofe, did I, you would ask him, Mephibosheth, my Rebbe, did I rule properly? Yofe Chiyavti? If it was a monetary case, did I make the right one liable? Yofe Zikisi? Did I exempt the right one? Yofe Tihati? If it was a question of Tumah, was I Metayer properly? Yofe Timesi? Was I Metame properly? Veloy Baishti? And I wasn't ashamed. So let's note something. There's a lot to analyze here. But we just need to note something already. David, we have to understand what monarchy was in order to be able to appreciate the immensity of what David is telling us here. A monarch in those days, the way they behaved in their presence, people didn't open a mouth. Even more than that, you didn't move. But Moshe Feinstein once said, we know that there are different minhagim about whether you should shake in davening or not. Right? Some davka shake, some davka shuttle, some davka don't. Each one has pious sources. But Moshe Feinstein said his minhag was always to shuckle in his davening, until one time he was present at an audience with the Tsar. He said, after that experience, the dread, the trepidation, he stood there, fearing to move, make the tiniest twitch. After that experience, said, I never shuckled again in davening. That was how you stood before kings. You didn't open your mouth. And certainly, nobody criticized the king. Now here we're seeing, David HaMelech, kings were like almost not human. David HaMelech, first of all, he's willing to bloody his royal garments. And second of all, he has somebody standing there and telling him in front of everybody, David, you messed up on this one. We can't appreciate it because we don't know what a monarch means. But he was told that in front of everybody. He just ruled on a case. And if Rashi says, David, try again. Rashi says, you would tell him. Tell him, you were wrong. A completely different concept of monarchy. So, and this kind of answers our question that you asked before. Everybody's wondering, right? It says here, Loi Chosidani, am I not pious? Right? David is telling Hashem, look how pious I am. The answer is, David's declaration that he's pious was actually a tefillah. We know that there's a din, Melech Shemochel al Kvoidei Ein Kvoidei Mochel. Part of a king's job is to maintain the dignity of his position. He's not allowed to forego his honor. He's not allowed to forgive. There's no such thing as leeway with the king. And the king is not allowed to do anything that could take down his dignity in the eyes of the people. What was David's approach? He completely trampled it. He completely transgressed this halacha, if I'm allowed to express it that way. Why? In David's eyes, the way David felt was, just remember we mentioned the other day the concept of Midas HaMalchus? And really what Malchus is just reflecting. David HaMelech figured, my job as a king is one thing. It's to serve as a vehicle representing Hashem. I'm not a king. I'm nothing. I'm just implementing Hashem's honor. That's all. That's why, for example, David did many unkingly things. His wife got very nervous from him. Remember? David HaMelech, when they were transporting the Aron back to Yerushalayim, how would a normal king behave? He would be sitting in a dais up on top watching the proceedings. David HaMelech was down on the floor with all the crowds jumping and bouncing around with his royal robes flying up and down. So what? Dancing. And he was bouncing. He said, Mechalker b'chol ois. He was jumping up and down. He wasn't dancing in a dignified way. He was jumping up and down. Michal saw that, and she told him sarcastically, oh, what a glorious day this was for the Jewish people when they saw the king competing with the lowest of maids. So, but his answer was, that is my glory. My glory is only manifesting Hashem's honor. Hashem's honor was the Aron. I made myself nothing in front of the Aron. And here also we're seeing, David HaMelech is doing nothing. My job is only to implement Hashem's honor. I'll do that by enforcing it. And I'll do it in all these other ways. Yes, if the women in the area need shyless answered, I'm there. I'm gonna mess my hands with mush. And yeah, also I'll be up already at the crack of dawn. Anybody can come and start consulting with me. In a way, he was mamish lowering the dignity of the royal office. Why? Because of his piety. Now piety, this sort of piety, he was taking dangerous steps. You have to be careful. You have to use discretion when you're implementing piety. So therefore, he was davening to Hashem. He was saying, look, I'm going about this and I'm relying heavily on you to make it work. He had bitachon that he can do it, and dafka through lowering himself, he'll gain people's respect. That was basically what he told his wife, Michal. Dafka through lowering myself, I'll gain people's respect. I'll gain the same reverence as the king who makes sure that he's going to maintain his dignity. So this was David's way of keeping the halacha of maintaining the royal dignity. By showing that I'm going to lower myself before Hashem, I'll gain that reverence. And therefore, David is davening. David is saying, I'm going all the way with my piety. He wasn't showing off. He wasn't showing off. Part of his tefillah was, he's saying, I know that with my piety, I'm taking risks. And therefore, shamra nafshi, preserve me, make it work. It was a tefillah. Make my piety work. That's a pshat that the... That's how the Mefarshim explained what's going on here. Right? Right? All he would say is, it's not me. It's just the covenant. That's all he was. Napshi was Hashem. Meaning, well, not Napshi was Hashem, but his whole essence was just serve as a window of Hashem. That's why also David is compared to the moon. What does the moon do? The moon reflects the sunlight. David was simply reflecting Hashem's honor. That's all. There's no me here. It's all just Hashem. Okay. But Lamaisa, I'm going to give another answer also. If we better understand it in a literal way, because there's an important lesson for us to get out of this also. It's another approach that's taken by the Mefarshim. What is anava? Does anava mean that whenever you have a spiritual achievement, tell yourself, that was nothing? If you pat yourself on the back and you acknowledge that I just did something big, is that a problem? If a person, every time he has a spiritual achievement, will say, that was nothing, and really feel that way, he's not going to get far. I'll give an example. Why is it, the famous dieting phenomenon, right? You're on a diet for 3 weeks, 4 weeks, then afterwards, you let go, you make it all back up with double in a week. You would think that if a person is exercising self-control, it should become second nature. How come it doesn't become second nature? And the answer is that when you walk by that piece of cake and there's a struggle right now, I'm dieting but I want the piece of cake, and you overcome, I'm not going to have that piece of cake. Okay? So you're now experiencing two things. In practice, you overcame, but the experience was not a pleasant experience. You're feeling the lousy taste of not having had that piece of cake. Over 3 weeks, you're having one lousy experience after the other. That is accumulating into one big lousy association with dieting. And that's why afterwards, when you finally do decide to let go, it's like a spring. You hold it down, you let go, boom, it jumps. You have to turn it into a positive experience. When you overcome your desires, your temptations, you have to turn it into a positive experience. How do you do that? How you do that is afterwards you have to reinforce it. This is a concept that my Rebbe called Bechira Bedas. You can make Bechira B'maisa, meaning, I'm going to do it or I'm not going to do it. But then, your feelings might conflict with it. Bechira B'das is the next step. Now that I've done it, in my mind I'm going to choose that result. Meaning I'm going to say, look what I did now. I just gained an experience in self-control, and that's going to contribute to my whole growth. Or in the case of the diet, look, I'm another step towards completely overcoming my urge for cake. Soon I'm going to hate chocolate cake. Oh man, I never see the day. But soon I'm going to hate chocolate cake. I'm another step towards accomplishing my dream. If immediately after not eating the cake, you think of the figure you're aiming for, and you focus on that a little bit, each experience can turn positive. Each time it's bolstered by such a thought, you can turn it into one positive experience after the other that really does reinforce the capability of overcoming. So therefore, there is a certain element of being able to tell yourself, I just achieved something big. I just overcame. Now, still, attributed to Hashem, etc., etc. But don't tell yourself it was nothing. You can say, I took a big step forward right now in my spiritual growth. That'll contribute to successful continuation. Good night.